Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, some of you may think this is weird, but I loved it. I've been wanting to talk to a psychic medium for some time now, but never knew who to trust. I learned about Nancy Matz through a friend of mine and decided to take a chance and call her. I learned about my children, my job, and other fun mystical stuff. I was so impressed. She was right on with so many things. After talking to Nancy Matz, I walked away feeling great. Call her, 916-773-1657 or nancymatz.com. That's nancymatz.com.
Well, good evening, everybody. And here we are in the middle of October. And I suspect that most of you have done your taxes and your sigh of relief, and you're sitting back wondering how you're going to spend the evening, and here we are. So here I am with my guest, Nick Nash. He's a writer, a poet, a magical practitioner, and a spiritual researcher. He was awakened initially almost a decade ago by an unusual interest in astral projection. I would call it out-of-body experiences. And then his life was turned around and has resulted in an avid pursuit of spiritual wisdom from many disciplines. And he co-hosts a show every Friday and Saturday evenings. And if you want the links, go to the show's identifier for tonight, and you'll see a couple of websites that you can go and kind of peruse around and see what he's about. And I really wanted to offer, you know, his expertise in a field that I don't usually talk about. Astral projection is an interest of mine, but it's not something I speak a lot of. And so, Nick, I put in that we would go at least an hour or maybe a little more if you want. But you, you know, put in for an hour and a half, but you just talk, and when we're done with the show, we're done with the show. And whatever you want to do tonight, why don't you let us know, and we'll let you have the floor. So there you are. And we do have callers in the chat room. And we can get to those when you feel like you want a breath or at the end of your time talking to us. How's that?
That sounds wonderful, Nancy.
Okay. Floor is yours.
Oh, wow. So it's so good to be on your show again. My goodness, it's been quite a while since the last time.
I think about 3 years.
Yeah, about that.
And we've connected and we said, well, you need to be on the show. And once in a while we send a little note to each other. And it's just life. It just is, you know, in front of us, and we just grab onto it and keep going forward all the time, you know. So it is what it is, and luckily we're still alive and kicking, and everything's good. So tell us about yourself. How did you get into this, and what was that spiritual awakening?
Well, actually, I have to mention something before about we got to get you on our show. we know how busy you are, Nancy. We know how busy you are, but Kathy was talking to her last night, and she says, you got to tell her. Got to tell her we want her on our show again. So I'm letting you know. Yeah,
okay,
we
I'm hearing
still.
You. And we can do this. We'll have to talk about it. Yes, thank you, Kathy. And what area code did you say she was at? I see another caller just came in.
Somewhere.
That's okay. That's okay. Tell us about yourself.
Wow. Well, roughly 8 or 9 years ago, one of the things that I've noted, and only in the last probably 5-6 years, is that very specific things happen to us that kind of get us off our stride. And, you know, sometimes they are designed to show us very specific things about ourselves, or to you know, take care of very specific aspects or components of us. But what I found in many, many cases was that the greater the challenge or the adversity, the greater potential there is for change afterwards. The potential definitely exists there. One of the problems that all of us, or many of us, have been raised in, you know, Judeo-Christian backgrounds. You know, I'm certainly one of them. I was raised up in a very strict, very abusive Baptist home. And I had this idea in my head that only the Baptist way was the right way. Everybody else was wrong. And this is what I was essentially had placed in my consciousness from a very, very early age. So when I got to the age of, you know, beginning my teenage years, I began to see things about religion in general that I found very, very distasteful, and it created a lot of problems for me as a teenager. However, the point is, I wanted to make the point, was that I did, or I was raised in this type of environment, so I'm very, very cognizant of Christianity. I still regard, very specific sections of the Bible, especially as it pertains to the words of Christ or some of the apostles. And just a quick example is probably one verse that is a guiding light for me, and it was written by Paul to the Romans, Romans 12:2. And it essentially says, "Be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may be able to prove what is the right and true and acceptable perfect will of God." Essentially, that is the verse, a little variation there. But the point being, of course, is that even Paul was saying to his church, to the Romans, that, don't conform yourself to this world. You have to transform your mind, which means you have to go out and seek the information and the wisdom. You know, it's not handed to you on a platter. And, one of the problems that I even see now, and it's not a problem, unless, of course, somebody makes it a problem, but, the spiritual exploration and spiritual growth, I believe, can be very stunted if you rely on a religion or a minister to essentially feed you, once a week on their Sunday service. And we know that spirituality is more than just one day a week. It's, a 24/7 operation for those of us that are, working in the light. So, as I said, my point was that I wanted to, let your listeners know that I have come from this background. I'm very, very cognizant of the Christian faith, the Bible, the mindset. I joined the Army at 17 with my parents' permission. They wanted to get rid of me as much as I wanted to leave, so it was, an amicable parting. But
you went to where? College?
No, the military.
Oh, the military. You said it softly. You went into the military. Okay.
Yeah, the Army at 17. But what I found, it was when I was out on my own, and this was about a decade ago, I was in a very, very difficult period of my life. Things were very, very black. I was in pain every single day, suffering from emotional problems, a host of other things. And the
from
initial start.
Military experience?
No.
From your military experience?
The military experience.
Just life.
To be
okay.
honest. To be honest, one of the things that bothered me the most that actually was a real trigger was I began to almost be enraged when I began to allow the tapes of the abuse from my childhood to play through as an adult.
Oh.
And that can be so, so damaging if we can't find a way in order to neutralize that energy, because it can be so, so, so powerful, and it can be so crippling, as many of us already know. And I was very, very fortunate. The first step for me, actually, I had this odd desire to learn about astral projection. It had nothing to do with spirituality or learning about me. Deep down, to be honest, I thought that if I learned how to astral project, I would be able to do something that nobody I knew could do. I would be special. And as I said, quite honestly, there was no spiritual component to it at all. But at the same time that I was going through this, I had never, ever any coincidences. There was an election here in our province, and there was a candidate that was, she was a university professor. I'd never met her before. I was living on the ninth floor of an apartment building at the time, and we wanted change in this province badly, change in the government. I called them up and I said, "I'm on the ninth floor. I'd like a sign. Could I get a sign from you?" He said, "Yeah, come on down." I went down there. I met who turned out to be the candidate's daughter, got a sign, and I came back, put it up, and I'm sitting there, and another odd thing happened, because, these coincidences sometimes are designed to, sometimes just to make us aware of some things that we need to be made aware of. But I sitting there, and I got the oddest urge to call back and ask if they needed to volunteer. I'd never volunteered on a political campaign before in my entire life. So the final 2 months, 2.5 months or so, I was going there pretty well every day, you know, a couple days here and there off. And it was incredible. It was like I didn't suffer from depression. When I got there, interacted with the people, the atmosphere was absolutely wonderful. Our candidate won by a landslide. But what I found after, in looking back, was that for a brief period, I got to see the real me, the me that was inside that had been, you know, essentially shackled by a lot of negativity that had, you know, developed over the course of years and years and years and years, and with no release or no way to neutralize it. And so these were two things that were happening at the same time. Now, I was also introduced to one very, very powerful method that is so simple. And when I first heard about it, I said, oh, there's no way that's going to help me. Because as I said, at the time, you know, this was happening. There was a lot of shifting internally going on, emotionally and spiritually. I began, I actually, more coincidences, because I was on this campaign, you know, working for the campaign, and I ended up working in the large part back in signs with the candidate's daughter, and we're talking back and forth. And I'd come in one day and I said, look, I got to take off early because I want to go down to the library. There's a lecture on dream interpretation. And she goes, oh, wow, that's a coincidence. She goes, I've got a friend of mine down there that's on a book signing tour. She goes, why don't you drop by, introduce yourself, tell her that you're a friend of mine. So I went down to this lecture, and I was not pleased. It was very, very old paradigm. I had actually pointedly asked, well, what role does astral projection play in dreams? And he said, there's no such thing. And, you know, so I backed off. I was not pleased with the answer. However, you know, I understand. I left. I went out into the hallway, and there's a gray-haired lady behind a desk, and she's got these books there. And I knew that this was my friend's friend, so to speak. I introduced myself. The book was called Dead As I'll Ever Be.
Dead As You Will Ever Be. Wow.
Dead As I'll Ever Be. But I'm going to tell you, that was the turning point for me, because I understand why. It was about a week later that I picked up that book, but I understand now this strange series of coincidences that happen. In that book, she has one short paragraph, and what she does is she says she was at the age of 16 or 17, I can't remember. She said she was walking home from church one day, and she realized that she was not getting anything from the service. She was not being fed spiritually. And she said to herself, well, look, I believe in the golden rule, and I believe in a divine creator. What more do I need? And she made a decision that day that she wasn't going to return to church, but she was going to strike out on her own and establish her own spiritual truth and her own spiritual path. And I will tell you, quite honestly, I bawled like a baby. I cried and I cried and I cried, because for the first time ever in my life, somebody had written something that I had only dared hope was possible. As I said, you know, I had this programming in my mind that the Baptist belief was the only belief, that everybody else was wrong and everybody else was going to hell. And of course, because I had stepped away from this belief system that I was going to hell, the only way that I could come back was if I repented and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, and as I said, I bawled like a baby, because it was the first time somebody had actually written that, no, you don't have to follow a religion to be a spiritual person or to have a you know, develop yourself as a spiritual being. And, you know, for me, that was probably what began the real crumbling process and the 180-degree turn in my life as far as, you know, my activities, my priorities. Even what, you know, I found some of the activities that I was engaged in before, they no longer interested me. But one of the biggest items that I noticed is a real avid interest in gaining more knowledge. I was introduced in the particular method of astral projection that it was through a book, Denning and Phillips, when it was essentially energy or consciousness transfer to an astral vehicle. And I had been using, you know, their exercises. They had a number of exercises. This is the first time I'd ever ran energy through me. And this was actually quite noteworthy because I didn't understand. I couldn't understand why I couldn't make or imagine the stream, the energy stream going through my body, and they had a very specific process for it where it went through like a fountain. And the best that I could get was a black, blue, oily substance. But as I said, I had never ran energy through my body before. I had no idea. And I tried a number of things, staring at a white piece of paper for a couple of minutes before I even began this exercise, and the same thing happened. And then it was about a month and a half, or probably a month, 2 weeks roughly, I felt like I wasn't making any progress at all. As I said, I was in a lot of pain, but I was still trying to, at least every second day, follow through on the exercises.
Are you talking about a kind of a kundalini energy, or you were trying to feel the molecules of the... Okay, so what you're trying to do is resonate at a level that you identified as you, yet bring in the energy of the universe.
Well, it was
or change your vibration.
Essentially, yeah. To be honest, at the time, I had no idea what I was doing or why I was doing it, only that it was a strong suggestion in the book as a preparation for it. And, you know, I wanted my foundation to be as strong and as durable as possible. And it would, the actual exercise itself was, visualizing roots from the instep chakras, going deep into Mother Earth, and then drawing the white energy up, but drawing it up through the legs, through the body. But when it comes to the crown chakra, splitting off on either side like a fountain and then looping up underneath the feet. So it's a continuous cycle of energy that's going through the body, and you're visualizing this, and I'm a very visual person. I found that out, which was a huge learning experience in itself. Had some very, very interesting experiences as well in when I began awakening to specific things like the clairvoyance. I can recall sitting in my apartment. I had a little bachelor, and I was reading, and I had stopped, and I had this vision flash across my mind of this little, not little, I guess about 5-6 feet tall green plant that looked like a bamboo plant with leaves sitting in a corner of my apartment. And this is odd because I'm not a plant person. I've never had plants like that. I've never had any desire to have any plants. Roughly a week later, I ended up having to go to the doctors, and this was around Christmas time. It was 2 days after Christmas, I believe. I was walking back, and I could have gone straight, but instead I turned left on a particular street. And I got no more than 20 paces, and I looked down the street, and my jaw just dropped because that plant that I had seen in that vision was sitting out in the garbage with the Christmas garbage, sitting there
garbage?
In the middle of the snow.
Oh my!
Somebody had thrown it out into the garbage, and they had shown me a picture of this specific plant. So I brought it home, made it my own, and I was pretty funny because a lot of the leaves, I had to replant it. I found beer caps in there and everything, and the poor little thing was in a little can that the roots had already broken through, so it had a tough time, and it was in a smaller, another container that was really restricting the roots, so I ended up, as I said, I had to transplant it and stuff like that, but the leaves kept dying on me, and I was, as I said, just learning about energy, and I learned a little bit about energy transferring, so I'd use a visualization process daily to try to heal this plant, or at least to give it some vital energy. And what I saw happening was the leaves just kept dying, and I thought, oh, well, I'm not doing anything. Obviously, I can't do anything. And then I noticed, finally, that one little green shoot right at the top. These leaves were dying. They needed to die. But what I understand is it was actually Kathy that had mentioned it was like the snake of a skin, or the skin of a snake, rather, you know, that needs to be shed in order for the new. Mm-hmm. And that was exactly what was happening with this plant. And I saw that little green bud on the top one day, and I had tears in my eyes when I was looking at it. Like, oh, my goodness, I actually did something. I actually helped the client. You know, I didn't think I was doing a thing, you know, and I was, you know, a little depressed about that. But, you know, however, you know, with that type of background, one of the things that it did open me to was a very specific aspect of magic, a discipline known as servitor magic. And it was through one of the exercises, and essentially manifesting a blue sphere of astral matter, sending it to a location with very specific programming, having it return at a specific time, and then reabsorbing it. And what happens with this is that it serves as your eyes and ears, depending on the programming, at a specific location, and what you see in your mind once it's downloaded, and there's a specific process for that as well. But it takes usually 3 to 4 minutes for it to filter through to the conscious mind, so you're able to see whatever this your servitor has been seeing during that time that it was on site. Now, I found this fascinating because I'd never heard of anything like this before. And, of course, it launched me.
Kind of like a telescope, a telescope that leads you to your remote location, and you use it as a focal point. I would call that remote viewing. I guess that's another term. But it's
remote
almost
viewing,
the same concept.
It is, but there, in this case, there's an actual thought form or an actual construct that is actually sent with very specific programming to a location. Now, one of the interesting things that I found about that is it requires a lot of practice in order for it to be really, really effective. Because one of the problems I ran into, and when I was I keep a journal of experiments that I do, trial and error. I love the trial and error when it comes to magic. I think that is key to it. But what I found was that it speaks in symbolism as well. So there's some kind of language that we also receive in our dreams that I found was very, very similar to the way that this servitor was gathering information and then transmitting it to me when I finally reabsorbed it. A lot of dream-type symbology, and, I didn't understand it. I was fortunate because I had an acquaintance in that building at the time who was, metaphysically minded, and I'd call him up at, 11 in the morning, and I'd say 2 o'clock this afternoon, and then hang up, and he'd know that at 2 o'clock in the afternoon that I would be sending a particular servitor to take a look at his location, where he was, what he was doing, and then come back. So he knew in advance, and of course, something like this, obviously there's a certain amount of personal responsibility in terms of your actions, similar to using any magic. You don't do anything that you wouldn't want done to you, essentially being the bottom line.
That's really great. That would be something that people would be interested in knowing, is how to use whatever you called it. I couldn't hear the word very clearly, so you might want to even spell it out, is that there's other ways of obtaining information. It gives you a platform to hold on to, that you can trust the process. People know that I do remote viewing, ghost investigations, or I work for real estate and tell what's wrong with the house. That's just by the seat of my pants. I'm just out there doing this. But this could be something that would give you confidence, security, and even, like you said, it's very exciting to think of this as one of the first steps that you took, and it was successful. So do me a favor. I know it might be a hard word to spell, but if you can at least pronounce it slowly so people can turn around and write it down, perhaps, and maybe look it up.
Certainly. They are called servitors. S-E-R-V-I-T-O-R-S. In fact, the Buddhist priests use a variation of them called tulpas, T-U-L-P-A-S. Now, these are, oh my goodness, their application is, it's based essentially on the imagination of the practitioner. For instance, there are variations in terms of how much of a life expectancy a servitor will have. Some magicians that I do know use them as guardians for their for their particular sacred space. So they constantly have one that is they're connected to and they're supplying it energy while it's doing its job. There are others that are, for me, I only work with short duration and purpose specific servitor. So there's a very, very specific purpose for working with them when I do. I don't do it that often. Now, one of the, this brings up a point that I really, really need to stress is that this is certainly a fascinating component of magic. I mean, but one very, very small component of magic, but what I have found through a lot of distress, I could tell you, is that we are each given very, very unique gifts and abilities that are to be used in our own unique way. And, you know, when I began this, I assumed that, you know, because based on my my upbringing that, you know, when you have a guide to a particular method that it says you have to do this, 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 and this, that it must be done. And that, you know, my understanding, as I said, with the original consciousness transfer method, it was not effective for me. And I'm telling you, for 2 months, 2.5 months, I tried it. I get to the point of the vibrations, and then it would stop. And my biggest lesson in this was I started to get very distressed about this because I thought I was doing something wrong. And I went online, and I found out found another site called Astral Dynamics by Robert Bruce. Some of you may have heard of this name. He is a pioneer in astral projection. What he designed was what he called the rope technique, and it was it's a tactile method as opposed to a visual method, a tactile method that he designed specifically for blind people so that blind
wow.
people would be able to astral project. And this is the interesting part, is as I said, 2.5 months at least that I was practicing this exit method that I had been, you know, shown in my indoctrination, and it wasn't working for me. With one session of Robert Bruce's rope technique, I got more benefit from than 2.5 months of the other way. My point was that sometimes we have to adjust to us and what suits us. You know, there's no one size fits all when it comes to, you know, that sort of thing.
That's very true. And it's a perfect example. When I first started in this in 1990, the group that I was associated with, Spiritualist Church, and they felt I was in a place where I had a gift that as people call and say, I see spirits all the time, I get this off, that person, this, and I'm always being bombarded. And I said, well, you need to control it. So they would promote in this spiritual church meditation. And I don't sit very well, nor do I relax very well. And that sounds like I have a problem, but to sit and quiet my mind and be quiet, that wasn't a trigger point where I could get a result that I wanted. So I had to try something else. So as you who are listening, Nick is sharing some pretty potent aspects of his life where he was asking the universe to show him a direction and structure where he could expand himself as a spiritual being. And it was shown to him that if he did it this way versus that way, so, you know, I would like you to mention this gentleman whose program you really embraced one more time so they can write this down, even if you have to download it later on, everybody. Just to listen to the people that have influenced Nick and given him a brand new spiritual direction. Nick, the name of this gentleman one more time, please.
Yeah, his name is Robert Bruce, and his site is astraldynamics.com. And the technique that I spoke about is called the rope technique. And actually, I'll give you very, very quick to describe it as essentially laying down. Now, preparation for this is actually having a rope, a hemp rope in your hands and twisting back and forth so you actually feel what it feels like in your palms, because this method is, as I said, a tactile. It's based on touch, not sight. So, you know, the preparation is the rope in your hands and, you know, back and forth, whatever, putting it aside. And what he says is pretending that there's a rope coming from the ceiling at a 45-degree angle. What you do is reach up with astral hands and grasp it. You don't see yourself doing that, but feel yourself doing that. And then the key is simply to use those astral hands and physically, you know, essentially physically, pull your astral body free of the physical. And as I said, 2.5 months of the other method, and I used this the first time, and I got more of an effect from this than I did from the others.
I love that. That is wonderful. I hope everybody listening got as excited as I did when I heard that. Clearly, when you do it without realizing that you're doing it like I have, but then setting upon a course to make it happen, two different dynamics. So I hope that everybody's getting excited as I just did listening to this brand new technique.
It
very
is very, very powerful. If you try it the first time, even the first time, I can tell you that you're going to sense the shifting within you. And the more energy and effort that you apply, the more benefit that you're going to get from it. And if you do continue with using that, certainly protection. Oh, my goodness. The astral is not exactly a friendly place at this time. There's a lot going on. That was the other point that I wanted to make as well, is that some of us are here to specialize in very, very specific things. Others are here to ensure that they have a very more of a well-rounded, like a little bit of everything, kind of the jack of all trades, so to speak. And one of the beings that I have worked with is, of course, Archangel Raziel. I was channeling messages for roughly about a year. I was working with him for about a year and a half. But that's another step forward, because that was very, very progressive, right? Just to orient you, though, that was a stepping stone for me, learning about astral projection. I'm not here to be an expert or to teach it. It was important in many, many ways to establish a foundation, and it opened a lot of doors for me. What I progressed to was it's a technique known as a shamanic journey, and it is essentially spirit travel. And I found this extremely easy to do once I had this grounding in the astral projection. Where at one point when I began, it would take me up to 10 minutes of breathing before I could get my mind into the place where I could send my consciousness forward or out to a location. And now it's to a point where I can orient in the space of walking into a room and sitting down in the chair and then just leaving. But that opens up, a whole new world. One of the things that I'm finding, I'm not sure you may find this in your work as well, is a reflection of the dream world and the real world. People that are seeing things in the dream time that aren't just random experiences or occurrences. And then when they come back to this waking life, they find that something happens that triggers or mirrors what they've been shown or what they had brought back from the dream time.
A client just called me earlier and saying that he went to visit his family in San Francisco, and he had gone away he hadn't seen before, and he was given cautions. He took the 680 and then 327 or whatever it is, and it just like that, he had dreamt it, and it wasn't a prophetic dream. It was just something that happened, and he really relayed that. Is that what you mean, or does it mean that you're consciously leaving your body and you're then experiencing something what you would call the dream world? Maybe I need to have that clarified.
No, you're exactly right. the reflection of the mirroring of the dream image or the dream experience, either highlighting or bringing your attention to something in the waking world, but perhaps I don't mean just a precog, not necessarily precog, but what's the word I'm looking for? Something to orient us or to prepare us for something that is going to be transpiring soon. I guess that's what I'm trying to get at.
Perhaps it's I wouldn't say warning or spiritual notice to do something, but it clearly was a premonition, a precog dream, but maybe it's not a randomness. Maybe it's a forecast of something that needs to be taken care of for you personally, not just you go in the store and you realize you're not going to find mustard there, kind of a thing. So I don't know. That's a real interesting statement. How do you discern the differences, and how can you request the difference? How can you say to your universe, by the way, I'm going to take a trip. Is there any warnings or any concerns, or is this going to be an exhilarating trip and I can just relax and go with the flow? Can't tell. I wouldn't know that one.
I know. And that's one of the things, too, is that, I mean, from your perspective, how possible is it for a psychic to say to a prospective client or a client that 6 months from now, guess what? You're going to be in a home with a white picket fence. You're going to have the love of your life. You're going to have a dog and, you know, your car and your dream job. And in 6 months' time, in order for that to take place, it means that millions and millions and millions of small little details have to be set in place or in motion, and actions have to be taken by the individual if they are to see what the psychic says is going to happen in 6 months in order to foresee that to fruition. My point, my question to you is that it's not likely that it's going to, 6 months, in 6 months' time, what the psychic is essentially going to do is what they're going to say based on the energy that's present at the moment. Is that correct?
I love how this is flowing, because I wasn't sure where we were going. You're such an articulate writer, and you have so many things you could talk about. So I'm kind of excited to think this is the branch of interest that's shown itself to you tonight. I love this topic, and it's come up in many talks that I've given in a lot of radio shows and other shows I've been invited on lately. There's a movie that just recently out, and I've just seen it. I don't go to the theater as much as I have to wait until DirecTV lets it come on, HBO. And the movie is called Push, P-U-S-H. And I unfortunately don't remember the characters. One of the characters is a 14-year-old girl that does play the lead vampire in the Twilight series. That's all I can remember. She's a little blonde. Very dramatic actress. I think she's very capable. Anyway, she is a psychic, and her mode of predicting is an impulse to sketch. So when she's sketching and she draws something, she's at that moment projecting the ultimate outcome at this moment if nothing changes. But she says it appears that when she draws something that has something to do with her or somebody else, that the near future can be changed. Now, what I actually agree with that. When a client calls me up and says, "Da-da, how about my brother-in-law or my sister and brother-in-law?" If she does not go back and tell them what I've said, then they will move, have a second child, or get divorced, whatever it is we're talking about. But if I talk to the gal and say, "Boy, it looks like you're going to be able to do that move in 3 months," and or if you don't do it then, and I'm seeing the purchase point, then you move in September. When that time comes around, they have the choice to push it out. So my coming up with 2 months means, well, in March they thought about it, but then they figured they didn't have enough money, and they push out September. Or if she comes to me and says, "You know, in March when you told me I was going to move, what we did was we put the money down the house, but we fell through the cracks, and the loan didn't go through. How would I know the difference?" So it appears that if you're aware of the future and it's your reading and you can make it happen, when the point comes for you to decide on something, it is your choice to make it happen then or not. And for the other people who aren't involved in reading, if you say nothing, then what I say to that person usually will come true, which is actually really amazing. So what we're talking about is getting old premonition readings, or if you go to dreams, or you ask travel see the future, if you say that at that point you can enter a dream situation and see the future, or you come to a psychic like myself and ask for a reading, the dynamics of how it plays out can be different, or to be changed. So your comment was, as I see it at the moment, a situation. There are some things that are written in rock, carved in rock, and cannot change. And I call those the high points, and they're on your karmic path. And I am the perfect example. I'll share, everybody knows I've moved a couple times here. I have a friend that I banter with. And, you know, sometimes you just say something, and then they'll say something. He says, well, how's your moving to? Does it have shutters? Shutters. And I go, no. Well, after a few moves, here I am in a house with shutters. Never had shutters on a house in my life. So I bought a house in a neighborhood, and it's built in 97. So the style in 97 just happened to have houses with shutters. So it was locked in stone that I had to have this house, because this is a house where a lot of events could happen. With the other houses, I mean, one in Sierra Vista for 3.5 years, worked in Tombstone. I wonder, my friend never saw that house, because it wasn't the house of destiny. It was a house of opportunity. So that's another way I define a reading. There's some things I say that I feel are locked in place and cannot be changed, but you can divert off the path and stretch it and push it further out. Or you could divert and take other paths and experience more before you come to that that fork in the road with the rock with the directions carved in it. I think I got off the path a little bit, but I think your question was, if you get a reading from a psychic, is that locked in stone, or is that how a psychic sees it at the moment? So I kind of said a little more than you were probably waiting. Everybody go, oh, yeah, stop talking. Let Nick finish.
No. That's great. You're getting to exactly what I was trying to get at as well, is that, you know, for somebody to tell the client a guarantee that in 6 months' time that they don't have to do anything, that this is just going to magically be given to them, essentially. And that's very, very misleading because, you know, as you said, you know, and as I mentioned, there are numerous things that need to be set in place or in motion for that to come to fruition in the time period that it's, you know, that's been stated.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There has to be that synchronicitous situation that dominoes into a situation where it can play out. And how many people have unconsciously tampered with that path and chose something else because it appeared and it looked more interesting than where they were headed to the ultimate destiny or where they were supposed to show up. And that's very curious, huh?
Indeed, I think coupled with that, I think, is that so many people are wanting to know what their calling is or what their mission or what their role is within this particular lifetime. And I guess it touches a little bit on what I said earlier, is that not all of us are here to be experts in one particular area. Many of us mm-hmm. need a broad range of experiential reality, essentially, that reacquires the wisdom that our higher self or our oversoul actually has. But the point that I'm trying to get at is that we can. I know this from my own path. I'm just saying this from my own self. Is that when we have preconceived notions, or when we allow others to dictate, you know, for instance, what a psychic is supposed to do, or for me, I'll just speak for me, working with Raziel, I was channeling messages from him once every week, every Sunday, but I don't do personal readings. That was not the purpose of that collaboration at the time, and as I said, you know, this is all such a learning experience for me. He required somebody at that time to put out very specific keys into the public consciousness. I, at the same time, had begun working with him, and I required his assistance in order to, for very specific things for my own learning. And, you know, as I said, I worked with him very, very closely, but I had assumed prior to working with him that, obviously then all channels do personal readings. And, as I said, it was a little strange for me to find out that that's not part of your job. That's not part of the you know, the collaboration that you have with him to give personal readings. It's simply for him to get out those very, very special keys. But long drawn out here, but the point is that it's important that we realize not you know, not all of us are here to be experts in one particular area. And one of the things that Raziel had mentioned, maybe I'll get a comment on you about this, is that if we want to find out what our true role is or what our true mission is, find out what activity we do that makes our heart sing. When we find that out, determine how we can use it to benefit others. When we can do that, we will find out what our unique purpose or role is within this lifetime. Does that resonate with you?
Absolutely. I feel like what you're saying is that people come to me and ask for their purpose in this lifetime. They've had families or career and they feel unsatisfied. And I often will speak to what makes you happy. And, of course, everybody wants to quit their job and suit some other occupation. And it's not always that easy. Just because I did it doesn't mean everybody should. But what I think people don't do is know who they are as people. A lot of times our passion comes from simple, like planting flowers in the garden. But your soulful purpose is to uniquely discover what makes you happy. Can you make a career out of that, or you can do what you need to do? Once you're happy, it will bleed and blend. Bleed is the wrong word. Blend into all aspects of your life. I had a talk with a gal earlier today, talking about how she's now finally figured out to look at the glass half full, not half empty. So we all need to figure out what can make us happy so we have a turn in attitude. That attitude change, half full versus half empty, will allow us to hear our spirit guides. They then can bumper you back onto your karmic path if you've wavered off a little bit. Now, those of you listening say, well, I have a terrible marriage, we're bankrupt, we lost our homes, we're on and on. And I only can speak that you're not alone, but you are born in this time when it is happening. So all of us have suffered. I don't know, a family talking, and mine too, this economy has really hurt us all. So it's camaraderie, it's self-identifying who we are. Another thing I've noticed, after World War II, when my parents were having, my sister and I, the economy and booming ahead was so important for the Korean War and Vietnam War started that we only saw prosperity and that we saw the beginnings of life and the beginnings of everything, my parents rather, and nothing was impossible. They developed ways of having people live in subdivisions, new inventions, and on and on and on. Yet every time there's been a conflict or a depression, people sit back and they start back and they go, what are we about and who are we? So it's like you're sitting and you have your hands in your lap and all of a sudden you push out. That's prosperity. So when we go through times of hard times, then we put our hands to our chest and say, okay, now who are we? Because that's all you have time, all you can do. If you could go out and buy a trinket and a toy and see a movie and dinner every night, who has time to have reflection on who you are as a person? I don't know if there is each and every one of us, whether you're 20 years old or 80, each 10 years, 15 years, there seems to be a world conflict when we're given a choice to have reflection on who we are as people. So the universe is setting it up so that you have good times, so you reap the rewards of your efforts. And then we have hard times to evaluate your efforts. And did you make yourself happy? Was it the reward you were wanting? Is money everything? Well, you know, you can ask a lot of us, money helps. But in reality, the happiest people I've known are the ones who are not the most wealthy because they truly have had time to reflect on what makes them grounded, the value of family, the value of who they are, and their spirituality. In times of conflict and hardships, the churches more or less thrived. More development of churches. People went to church every Sunday when their husbands and sons and brothers were in war. So it's not a right or wrong thing that they went to churches, but they certainly did question the meaning of everything. Now that we have opportunity to choose more freely, the churches are the environment of our emotional and spiritual upbringing. I come from a gentleman, my father was a spiritualist. They had New Thought in the years of my grandmother raising him. He was killed, and I was six. My mother became a Protestant Methodist. I married a Catholic for 21 years, and then on the heels of cancer and divorce, I became a spiritualist. So I kind of had a full circle. But all those avenues to allow me to learn my own choice of spirituality. So Nick is coming up with his form of spirituality. If I choose to believe in the extension of life, I need to have it proven to me that I can see that. Some people say, well, I want to see a manifestation of a spirit or ghost in front of me. Other people want to say, I want to leave my body. So Soul Traveler with Albert Taylor, he wrote about his out-of-body experiences. And where you're talking about Mr. Bruce, I forgot his name, first name, he wrote a book on out-of-body experiences. So your spirituality came in the forefront of out-of-body experiences with control, not remote viewing, but controlled environment of witnessing. So you also had a new level of spirituality given you.
Oh, most definitely. Interesting about Mr. Taylor's book. When I had picked it up from the library, and this was a few years ago, I had already been, had a grounding in astral projection already a couple of years prior, but I picked it up. Now, the guides that I was working with at the time, I could remember asking them, who are you? As they had given no names, and it was just we were just kind of feeling each other out at that point, and they had said to me, the end of chapter 3. Read the end of chapter 3. You'll know exactly who we are. And if any of you have read that, Travels Beyond the Body, I think the name of the book is, but what he talks about is that he's asleep in bed one night. He wakes up, it's the wee hours of the morning, and he's having an OBE, an out-of-body experience. But when he looks around, what he sees are, around his bed are these figures in cowls or hoods, kind of like priests or ministers. And these were essentially his trainers. And what they were doing, their job in terms of working with him at that point, was they were going to assist him in assisting souls who had become trapped or chained through, whatever. You know a lot more about this than I do, Nancy, but essentially assisting those souls that have become trapped for one reason or another and attached or chained to this third dimension. But my point is that the guides I was working with at the time, they said, read this. And when I read it, it's about his particular trainers that were teaching him a very specific type of soul, not retrieval, but soul rescue, essentially, to allow them to go to the light or to go on to the next incarnation, but essentially to break the chains of bondage from, what they had to the 3D and the Earth. But I found that incredibly fascinating, and obviously that you've mentioned it as well here.
So we're talking about his Soul Traveler by Albert Taylor.
Soul Traveler, yeah. Or Travels...
That's a really good book.
Yeah, okay, no, the other one was Robert Monroe, Travels of the Body, sorry. Yeah, that...
Robert Monroe, mm-hmm.
Robert Monroe, yeah, and the Monroe Institute.
And he has a Monroe Institute where he teaches how to lead your body, and he was the one that developed I have it in my mind, and then I want to say it. It's a closed-in room where you could witness... he wrote a book about it, the dead or not dead or something, visit with a relative, something like that, and where you could sit in a blackened room with a small tea candle, little tiny little thing, and view into a mirror and see the witnessing of your dead relatives on the inside of it. So the reference of Chapter 3 was actually Robert Monroe's Far Journeys and Journeys Out of the Body?
No, I believe it was Albert Taylor. No, it was Albert Taylor. That had said.
Okay,
yeah,
so I want to make sure. You've mentioned a lot of authors, and I don't want the audience to get confused. Albert Taylor in Southern California wrote Soul Traveler, so Chapter 3. For those of you who want extra reading, Robert Monroe is Far Journeys and Journeys Out of the Body. Mm-hmm. And then we have Raymond Moody, who also taught and teaches out-of-body experiences and spirit communication. So anyway, those are some good books. I wish I could say I've read a ton of books lately, but I do a lot of reading online, a lot of articles. So those are some of my favorites. but I will look up Professor Donald Bruce's book. So, Robert Bruce. Sorry, again, everybody, Robert Bruce. I'm going to write that down now.
That's all right.
Okay.
So many names, so many names.
Chatting along, this is really fun, just relaxing, having coffee. Of course, coffee got cold, and I found my hot pot heater here. Not hot pot, but one of those little plates you heat. Turn it on, heats up coffee cups. So I just heard a little noise. That's what I was doing, digging that up from underneath the desk here. Keep the coffee up so we can keep going. Okay, Nick, that's very interesting. Where would you like to take us? Would you want to talk about that a little further, or do you have any other good suggestions for people for their first-time out-of-body experiences? Or the other thing I was listening, you know, I am listening to, one of the things that really caught my ear is while you're out of the body, you talk of your guides taking you, teaching you. I think the audience would be interested because you really are someone who's explored this, and as you said, it was a real spiritual awakening. If you have a moment or if you want to go into another topic, cover it slightly. Is some of that about experiences as a new traveler? What were some of your perceptions? And you did bring up out-of-the-body experience with a slippage or a bump into or a witnessing of the dream state. And I'm kind of interested in knowing what that means.
Well, we do that pretty much every night, as it is. Some of us do it 3 or 4 times. And what I understand and what has been going on for a number of years now is that there are different types of out-of-body experiences that occur when we are sleeping. Now, one area is something that you're very familiar with and you mentioned earlier about karma. Now, there are some karmic debts. That's probably not a good word, but some karma that cannot be balanced. Well, there's some karma that cannot be balanced.
Go ahead, dear.
Well, what I was trying to say was that there's some karma that would be very, very difficult to be balanced while one is in the physical body. And what I understand, based on what I've been told by my own guides, is that sometimes when we do experience nightmares are a prime example, is this is happening in 4D, where there is that feeling. That is one thing about the astral, is that to the astral body, it is just as physical as being here, as we interact with our physical environment here. You know, we knock on the table and it's wood, it's hard. You know, similarly in the astral realm, you can bump into people and they're as solid as if they're in physical form. There's some a gentleman by the name of George Cavassalis.
Know his name? I do.
You know his name?
Sure. Is he the one that's been on TV about the ancient astronauts?
More than likely. I listened to one of his lectures, actually. Wow, it was probably about 3 hours. But what he talked about, and this is why I mentioned about the astral not being very, very safe. Now, in his own journeys, what he found out was that a number of things, but our 3D reality was designed as essentially a training ground where we would be able to have experiences that we could not have in spirit form. And of course, part of this reality is that it's polarity based. So it's dependent, obviously, on the perspective of the individual, each individual being different, each having a different life experience, of course, being raised differently, different nationalities, different parts of the world. They're all going to be very, very unique. But what he said was that when they established 3D, all souls had already been through the higher levels. We're talking about 5D, 6D, 7D, and we'd slowly worked our way down. What he said, when we come here, what they did with the astral was they set it up, and this is apparently done by those the entities that are polarized to the what we would call the evil or the dark side of the scale, but they set it up so that it was in 12 layers to mimic the 12 dimensions leading to the ultimate heaven or the top heaven or that from which we came from. And
wow, I haven't heard that before. Go ahead.
Within these 12 layers, there's a whole totally different groupings of entities and beings. One of the things about the habits, especially addictions, and you could, as I said, you probably know a lot more about this than I do, but I know that there are some tales, stories of people, say, who have been addicted to alcohol, and once they have passed away, they don't move on, but remain essentially anchored to a particular bar or a tavern, and they can also go one step further, and my understanding is that many can also attach themselves to individuals
One of my favorite topics.
Pleasure from it.
Yes, hitchhikers. You bet. That's something that's very interesting to me. And you feel like going to the astral plane, you can see these, or the experience that you said why we're here and the 12 layers is some of those spirits do then go over and we're still too addicted to the earth plane?
Some, yes. Now, according to some other sources that I did, one of the biggest, I guess it is a controversy, heaven and hell, based on religion. Now, Judeo-Christian, our background, many of us have been led to believe from an early age that this is a given, and this is the way that it is. Well, that's not the way that it is. I don't believe, personally, based on my own research, the idea of an actual physical hell, and is ridiculous, utterly ridiculous, and goes totally against the teachings of the Christ. Not only that, but we have also Pope John Paul II. We also have Billy Graham. And Billy Graham, and this was early 2003, I believe, but he came out and he said he didn't believe that hell was a real place. What hell refers to is a separation from God, similar
Correct.
To the demonic entities, or what we would call demons, or the darker entities. But the point is that when this reality was created, there had to have been a force, because our reality is based on polarity. It's polarity-based, where we look at things as good or bad. There had to be some force or entities to play the role of the bad. And we know, I'm trying to think if it was Gandhi or the Dalai Lama who said that the greatest time of accumulating knowledge or wisdom is usually the most difficult period of one's life, and he essentially was referring to, you know, the obstacles and the obstructions, the things that come in our path that block us, and we have to be very, very creative in finding a way either around it or find out what the purpose of it is so that we can get past that particular obstacle as quickly as possible.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, okay. I was going to read the thought there. I think that's part of what you were speaking to, the 13 levels. In a lot of religions, there's more than 7 planes, 9 planes, 11 planes, 13 planes of the spiritual growth, as we would put it, our deities, Christ, Buddha, Zen, all at the 13th level, witnessing what our lives are about. And it's our choice to evolve to that highest level and go back to the God force or however it works. And, of course, until we get to that side, we don't always know. And you're speaking to how if we could have all bad experiences and trust and believe in the universe and give us the wisdom out of body, come back to the physical flesh and not be crippled by our wants, wish, wants, and desires, and not then exclude spiritual life in a physical form. And though I kind of spoke in riddles really quick there, it's hard for people to understand that, and I'm a human being, I cannot read myself, I give readings, and through my readings I evolve, and maybe the journey of my life was to put myself on the playing field and be on the front line of other people's struggles so that I would have a better understanding of where does that put me. Well, did I hurt a lot, or did I help a lot, or do I volunteer for this life and I only have to do it once? Well, I don't think that's true because I see myself in the past lives. So the ultimate outcome of any spiritual awakening that you went through was understand the opulence, not money, but how you view your life from the lowest position to the highest position in a spiritual manner is as important as just being alive in the first place. And we have the choice to follow the karmic path tightly, and as I would envision a karmic path as being the sap of a redwood tree straight up to the top, or do you take branches and take that little a detour to learn a little bit more but come back? And a spiritual awakening is to trust your guides, trust your instincts, trust your spiritual awakening to keep you on the path so that we don't take so many detours and have an eye-opening experience. And I know everyone alive could say, well, I wish I hadn't done that one. I said to my sister, sure, too bad there isn't something we could push on the door that says rewind and just do something and then know we can do it over. Clearly, you and I think I'm younger than you. I have adult children, so that puts me in a category of grandma. And it says, you know, here I've learned what I've learned, yet my grandchildren aren't caring to learn that from me. And I would never impose my thoughts on my adult children or my grandchildren and say, you know, I did it this way. You want to learn from my mistakes. Everybody wants to do the journey their own way. Those who are spiritually attuned, as you are, Nick, we will say to the universe, you know, I will listen. I'll never forget, one Christmas, I bought my son and his wife, who had small children, and pocketbooks were pretty tight. And I thought to myself, I had discovered electric toothbrushes. And the dentist said I'd clearly, as I was going to get older, I'd really given my mouth a lot of joy. That I wouldn't lose any teeth, at least. And I thought, oh, that's wonderful. But electric toothbrushes, compared to $1.29 or $2 for a handheld, I mean, most people don't buy them. So I bought them, one for each of them. And what I got back from the family was, that was the stupidest gift they ever seen. And here I was trying to impose my wisdom on the youth or the young and not let them endure hardship and then get the message from their own dentist. And I was talking to my son one day, and I said, geez, I remember when my mother told me to buy electric toothbrush, and I poo-pooed her. Yet when my dentist told me how great it was, then I thought, wow, maybe I better go buy one. And he looked at me as though it never occurred to him that maybe it wasn't just my imposing my thoughts on him, but trying to say, learn from what I did wrong. And in reality, it's not so much that as much as being spiritually open to people and their suggestions and taking consideration and don't poo-poo it. So that was just a humorous side note. I'm sure that he wouldn't be really thrilled that I would talk about it on the radio. But it was a good example. How's that? Okay.
You make a great point, though, regarding the trusting. Trusting the experience and trusting the awakening. That was, I think, a major part of why I was kind of introduced into this or eased into this in the way that I was, because, I mean, it doesn't get more any unrealistic than astral projection when you come from a background that, you know, essentially is right up there with psychic abilities and being evil and demonic inspired and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, you get these little stray voices in the back of your head, you know. I had them with me for quite a while before I finally began to understand that this is my life and the spiritual truth that I establish is my own unique spiritual truth. And there's nothing wrong with, you know, taking wisdom from different types of disciplines and incorporating into my spiritual practice, because I don't think we're here to be part of a religion, but we're here to really show the true us, that, you know, that the spirit that is inside us. You know what? I did have a point to make on that, Nancy, on earlier regarding the heaven and hell. But it's one source that I did come across was that within these 12 levels that they recreated within the astral, there is one particular level that is especially for religious fundamentals. And there are very different areas within the astral that are, for instance, Baptists, Hindus, Muslims, whatever the case might be. As I'm saying, I'm not saying this is absolute truth. This is based on the information that you know, that I have researched. But the point was that in this life, they had contended in this life, if you do believe that when you pass from this, you know, beyond the veil, where you go to next, that there is a heaven and hell, that is what you will experience. You know, and for me, that's, oh my goodness, that's very confusing for a lot of people to even think that, you know. And
well, I think I'll make an example here. I have connected with somebody on the radio, and shortly I'll be on the show 8 o'clock tonight, and we were talking about heaven and hell and afterlife, and I brought up a movie, and he says, oh, I'm so thrilled that you watch movies. Well, I watch anything on the paranormal. Best movie I ever saw in regards to heaven and hell was What Dreams May Come. It wasn't the journey of the fire and brimstone or the faces in the mud. It was when he found his wife who had committed suicide. He had died a few years earlier from a car accident, and of course she couldn't handle stress anymore and decided she wasn't going to live. And she killed herself, and so in the process of killing herself, she had a lot of regret. So my definition of hell is the word regret. And when I see hell, it's, and I want to be very careful here because some people have religions that create that, I want to say that hell is a definition of regret, but hell is your own created hell. So her created hell was the wife when he found her, was a vision of her house, but in the colors of charcoal, grays, and blacks. So that to her was her hell. So if you, and I'm being real careful how I word this, if people you're listening, you really think you're going to hell, whatever that definition or that visual is, you could do that. And if you have a sense of regret and sorrow when you go over, that vision, however you put it in your mind, that will be shown to you. And then it's for you to wake up, however, years later, realizing you're past that point of pain, that you'll go to the true heaven of your choice. In the movie, What Dreams May Come, Robin Williams, like I shared with you, his children had been killed in a car accident. Then a couple of years later, he was killed. And he woke up on the other side of life, in spirit land, in his wife's painting. He had envisioned his heaven to be as beautiful and awe-becoming as the beautiful painting. So if you have not seen What Dreams May Come, it is a sadder movie. The children get killed, and then he gets killed, and she kills him. It's all the other. Put aside those moments and watch it for the content of the beauty, the landscape, and the statement of how we create our heaven and hells, because that's clearly what the movie was really about.
Wow, that sounds fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
you said Robin,
have you seen it?
Robin Williams? No, I haven't. No, I haven't.
Okay, What Dreams May Come, and audience, I'm not sure. By the way, I could not open up my chat room tonight. So I know the show's about over, and I'm sorry that I couldn't at least acknowledge Kathy and all those others in there. But I do want to say it slowly so you can hear. If you hadn't had a chance to rent the movie, I'm going to guess it's been at least 4 or 5 years since it came out. The only lead character I can remember would be Robin Williams. There was a couple other lead actor and actresses in the movie, and I just at the moment can't remember names. Robert Kubik Jr., and here I got the name wrong, had a very important role in the movie too. Robert Kubik Cuba Jr., I apologize. I mess his name up every time I try and remember it. Robin Williams in What Dreams May Come. It's well worth just watching the beautiful landscapes, his perception of heaven. It's absolutely fabulous.
It is interesting that there are movies like that that are coming out that are, I don't know, but I believe that what they put out in Hollywood, there's always a purpose. For whatever reason, there's always a purpose.
They have psychics on these. When they're writing these scripts or they're getting someone to do the landscape and decorating, they have to have someone like me there. I'm just collaborating with so many movies that are out now. I have not seen Hereafter, the gentleman that touches hands and sees things. Can't speak to that at all. Just don't go to theaters. But there's a lot of them out now. Exactly how I've been shown and it's seen it seems to be, like the movies The Others with Nicole Kidman. I have seen that so many times where spirit people live in their own dimensional space.
Mm-hmm. And that was fascinating.
It's like the movie Push that I just recently saw on TV. Someone had to be intuitive enough or thought it through, which is correct, in that if you get psychic information on yourself, you can change it. So you have to be true to the path. How will you know if you change it? Well, that's the risk of getting readings. And there are, of course, people who follow me and get readings a lot that I worry that they can be addictive, and I have to kind of be very gentle with them when they're in pain and saying you have to make the decisions. You have to let go and let it unfold. And that's very difficult. We don't want to make mistakes.
Very true. One movie that I just wanted to mention because it has, in part, what some of what we've been talking about, but certainly not a feel-good movie, called Event Horizon.
Oh my goodness!
That was an incredible movie. I had, you know, the whole idea behind it about the opening the wormhole, going through another reality in space in order to come out at another point in space. And did you see that movie?
No, I did. I kind of cringed a lot through that.
Oh my goodness, yes. Oh my goodness.
I have a hard time with violence and murder and mayhem, only because if I'm in an audience situation, the audience is screaming yell like a Jurassic Park. That one was hard because it could be a thread of some sort of truth. As people said to me, if you believe in the heavens, there has to be a polar opposite and the hells. In my mind, I have never seen a demon. And someone said, well, that doesn't mean it's not real. Well, maybe they don't mess with me because I'm very grounded, I'm very spiritual, and I'm very trusting of the divine. Why can't it be one-sided? Who says that the demons you witness are people who are so emotionally disturbed that when they become spirit people, they become whatevers? But the implication that there's multiple dimensions and parallel universes coexisting with us, as Stephen Hawking has even written a book about, and the main scientists of the day are talking about space and time travel wormholes, and that they've come to the conclusions that we coexist with 11 dimensions, not four, that why not parallel worlds? One of the best shows on TV was Dr. Makaka.
Dr. who?
Makaka. He's a Japanese professor, and his, I think it's Makaka?
Michio
Makaku,
Kaku, yeah. Michio
yeah,
Kaku,
Kaku.
Yeah.
And he had a wonderful show, it's been a couple of years back, talking about parallel universes. As we would understand, our universe is governed by our set of physics. Who says the universe sitting next to us overlays us, in which it could be person-to-person identical, wouldn't be existing for a different set of physics and they're governed by so-and-so. So maybe they don't have the color red, or they don't have gravity as we do, or maybe their civilization has advanced quicker and they live in such an advanced state that we wouldn't recognize. We don't know. And I love that thought. So Event Horizon came and it implied the polar opposites of dimension, this space, and then there's another, so that they went in such a totally negative universe through this travel. And the vortex to access that dimensional space was aboard this ship. And it was a real nail-biter.
It was, yeah. I agree totally. It was
people who had sensitive stomachs, huh?
It was uncomfortable for me too, but what I found was just the idea was absolutely incredible. I mean, there had to have been some thought go through it. And, you know, there's X-Men, the cartoons. I got which was one, there were 36 episodes of very, very special ones. But there was one particular mutant who was able to essentially do this, open up a wormhole, shoot inside, with the other end of the wormhole where he would exit from would be the location where he's going to, so it could be the other side of the world. What happened was that they slowed it down. For some reason, he had to slow down the transition into this other realm. And what he found was it was very much inhabited. And it was inhabited by beings that were not friendly to humanity in the least. So very, very similar to the, you know, the Event Horizon movie. It was very, very uncomfortable, distressing in some cases, but I thought, wow, the possibility that that is true, there are certainly realities out there. a point about this that I should enter here, parallel realities with us, not only as physical beings, but also in physical bodies, like we are in this reality, but I, my own experience is that we also have other aspects of our soul, our essence, that are at work in other realities as well. One of the things that I was urged to do right from the beginning when I began working on the shamanic journey, working in other planes, essentially with my guides, angels, whatever, was to set up very specific training areas. One I had for about 3.5 years. I have one now that is my secret place. It's the inside of a planet, actually, that has two dimensions overlapping. One is the cave area. One is the it's like a huge jungle expanse. It's quite beautiful.
Wow.
But the that was an important part for me, is that at this particular location, I was taken to a place I'd already been there before, and this was with Archangel Raziel, I believe. On top of a mountain, I looked up, and the sky was like these little puckers. I don't even, it's like somebody dropping a small, something small in the water and seeing the, you know, the waves, the circular waves. But they were all over the sky, and I didn't know what the heck they were. And down in the left-hand side, I saw it was a being that came out with black armor, huge black wings, and a sword, and it had my face. And
ooh.
I had my protection with me, ended up speaking with this entity. It's the point of believing or not believing what you see. And what I saw was we followed him through some kind of a doorway from a lush green into a place where there was fire, balls of fire literally coming from the sky. There was pools of magma all over. Everything was black, burnt. I don't recall any smell, but we came to one huge pool of magma, and he dove inside. We followed him. Of course, you're in spirit form. There's nothing that's going to injure you, but where he took us was a huge cavern. There was a bubbling pool below, but in this cavern, there was like a ring around the top or half of it, and there were very specific beings on in this ring. One in particular was on a higher throne. Now, that one that looked like me in the black armor materialized over above this pool of lava or magma, whatever it was, and these beings were very, very agitated. They were very, very angry. He began turning white, and there was little white streamers that went directly from his frame or his form to each of them, and each of these that it touched, it essentially was a poof, like smoke, and they were gone. What he did, I don't know how he did it, was he somehow collapsed another reality into this one, and destroyed the wherever the magma, the fire that was underneath. When we reached the surface, it was sunny. There were still parts of the grass that were smoking, steaming from underneath, but it was sunny. There were trees, flowers, meadows, things like that. And as I said, what he did, we watched as he compressed one into another. This was one of my counterparts, and he was doing something that I couldn't do. And you're listening, you can believe me or not. Since then, there were three others that I connected with, three other parts of me. One that I worked with was very, very shortly, and that was on behalf of a friend who wanted to see what was going on at a particular location. And what he brought me into a round room, he brought up an image of a house, and then he said, okay, let's see what we got here. And then he brought somehow brought another image down, and what I saw in this house was like it looked like a prison with old rusty bars, and that was essentially what was chained to that particular location in that house, and that was what that person was experiencing when they were there. It was so bad that this person's mother, who was a staunch Christian, did a lot of praying. She was a prayer warrior, and she was actually going to quit because she wasn't seeing any positive benefit or any positive results from her praying for her daughter in this house. It was pretty sad, but my point was that the parallel timelines, alternate realities, and us in other realities gaining wisdom and experiences. I'm not going to push that on anybody as truth, but based on my own research and my own experience, that is a reality.
I've never questioned someone's truth, because who am I to say I do or don't believe what you experience? Because I've had experiences where I've told people, if someone had told me what I've experienced, I wouldn't have believed them. But I do believe that we choose to have certain experiences or certain identities, or we have the privilege of identifying a parallel universe or multi-dimension or ourselves. I had a person, I think it was a gentleman client, talk about his out-of-body experiences. And he was in such discord because when he left his body, he had a shadow behind him always. And he tried to get rid of this. It was just on and on and on. And then one time he turned around and saw it was himself. And it was an aspect of his higher self guiding him through his terror, being his support system. So how can I say that isn't a true reality for what you're experiencing? Your spiritual growth is see different aspects of who you are. I would call this, in some ways I would speak to it being, I'm of the person Nancy, I just hit my chest, this is Nancy. Then I have a higher self, and then I have a super higher self. And I feel like there's the inside person that dreams at night, and then there's that spiritual being within us that's another aspect of us that has more wisdom than I do, because I bump into the walls just like everybody else every day. So I feel like this is a valid interpretation of your spiritual growth and the spiritual means to attain it, is to have a different aspect of your journey being shown to you as higher self, which I legitimize completely. There's some people telling about the journeys and they're just, like I said, Dungeons and Dragons type of thing, and they're always in combat. I call them warriors, and they're warrioring for all that mishappens in their life until they conquer those warrior situations. Well, they calm down, become the shepherd. Well, looks like we have 2 minutes left. How about a plug? Gosh, I hope I didn't talk in front of you too much. The topic is very fascinating between the two of us. I think we give something for our audience to kind of clue into. For those of you that were in the chat room and hung up, thank you for sitting and listening to the chat room, to the show. And come in next week. I'm going to have another gal who's an intuitive, who's a recent author. You can read up on her. Her name is Lisa, and I was hesitant to mispronounce her last name. So go to the Blog Talk Radio shows and see who I have for next week. And if you need me, of course, my website's listed. Nick, I have a minute, something left. Why don't you talk about your websites, and if you have something to offer to the audience or follow up, Kathy's show, she's still in the chat room.
You bet, yeah. Friday, Saturday, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I host a show with Kathy Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We're presently, I'm doing a series which I've called the Antichrist Chronicles. The reason is it's very, very pertinent to what is transpiring now as far as what we see going on in the world. There is a definite plan in place, but there's more than one, and that's one of the things I found out. But Kathy's Distant Echoes here on Blog Talk Radio. The notes and links and Raziel's message can be found at therazielremnants.wordpress.com, which is a blog, a Raziel's blog. For my own writing, mysticalmusings.bravemusings.com. Got some of my poetry over there, a couple of my stories that I've narrated in preparation for some of the bigger things. And yes, the last thing I wanted to say was, a technique that has served me extremely well and has brought numerous blessings to my life. Before you leave the house, when you can think about it, first of all, ask for your protection, of course, but secondly, address the Creator and simply ask the Creator to be given the opportunity and privilege of sharing their love and light with at least one soul when you are out. And I will tell you, the blessings are absolutely incredible.
That's a wonderful way. We have 20 seconds left. Just to remind you, you said some words that most people wouldn't be able to spell, but if you just look at the description for this show, those Blog Talk, WordPress, Brave Musing locations, www, are on the description for tonight's show. So go back and copy that, and you can download the show anytime you want. And we'll talk later, Nick. Nice to talk to you tonight.
Always wonderful to talk to you too, Nancy. Hopefully we'll get you on soon, right?
Yeah, send me a note and we'll talk about Kathy's show. She's on. Kathy's very in the, I see you on switchboard. Talk to you later, my dear. Thank you for coming. And Nick, good night to you.
All right, and good night to you, Nancy. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Right,
bye.